Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
To address profound fear and trauma, exhaustion, that particularly Black Americans have experienced for generations, accountability is all too rare. That's why I promised as president I would do everything in my power to enact meaningful police reform that is real and lasting.
But that has not happened. Yesterday, President Biden signed a new executive order on national police reform. The order creates a national database to track police misconduct, but it only covers federal law enforcement agencies. This marked the second anniversary of the death of George Floyd. He was the unarmed Black man who was murdered while on the streets of Minneapolis, Minnesota, while in police custody. Since Floyd's death, bipartisan efforts to craft national police reform legislation have fallen short in Congress. So where are we now? What has and what has not changed since that murder in Minneapolis? Tonight, we talk about this with Leslie Redman, founder of Don't Complain, Activate, and past president of the Minneapolis NAACP. Want to hear from you as well, our listeners. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Leslie, thank you so much for joining the program again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So let me start off with a bit of a look back. What has and has not happened from your point of view since the murder of George Floyd?
2 years later and still no justice, and that's why people are still standing up. You all watched as while Chauvin was on trial, another young Black man lost his life by the name of Dante Wright. I don't know if the nation was aware that just this year, February 2nd, 2022, Amir Locke, a 22-year-old who was asleep at his cousin's couch, was ambushed during a no-knock warrant that he had nothing to do with and murdered. That was by the Minneapolis Police Department. We are still dealing with an unjust system, and now it's getting even worse. I would argue, you know, we lost Chief Arredondo, who was the first African-American police chief who actually fired all four officers after George Floyd was murdered. We just continue to see injustice, and we haven't seen enough action. I would say politicians, people get outraged in the midst of things, but then go to sleep at the wheel. And so a number of us are still fighting on the ground to get some form of justice, because we know the only true justice would be if George Floyd was still alive today.
What's your opinion of the executive order that President Biden signed yesterday?
I would say it's something, but it's not enough. Black people are still not safe in America. If President Biden and so many others were serious about protecting us, there would be executive orders around white supremacy, right? I believe that the terror that's reigning through all over this nation is all actually interconnected, and I don't think that we should disconnect it. White supremacy is deeply embedded in the fabric, and so the police are just mimicking that behavior. What President Biden put in order, yes, is going to make some steps in the right direction on the federal level, but we know the city and states are still making their own rules, regulations, and that's the people that we're encountering on a day-to-day basis. And so while I think it's a step, I definitely know that there's so much more work to do.
You know that executive orders last only as long as the president who signed them is in office, as we saw with whether you cared about the dozens and dozens and dozens of executive orders that President Trump signed. As soon as he was out of office, President Biden overturned those. If President Biden doesn't win re-election, if he plans on running, any executive order that he signs could be overturned by the person who succeeds him. And so, as we know, there has been no movement on Capitol Hill, specifically in the tight vote Senate. And that is where the real legislative muscle is. Your thoughts about that?
It's a disgrace, not only on the federal level, but also locally. We haven't seen our representatives move either, right? Mm. And this is the home of the reckoning that was supposed to have happened. And so, again, I think it just really reveals America's position when it comes to Black people, and really just another indicator that our lives do not matter in America. And it's evident, even though we see these performative actions every once in a while and this performative outrage, when it comes down to legislation, like you said, and when it comes down to the hearts and the minds of the people who are in a position to create change, it's not there. Mm.
202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. We are talking about 2 years after the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. What has and what has not happened since his murder? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Lavelle calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, what's on my mind is that this is going to continue on happening no matter what. There's nothing that anybody can do about it, because until someone in Congress, someone in the Senate, someone that a mayor, governor, or whatever that has a powerful position, when something happens to one of their family members, then they're able to come together, kumbaya, vote, and get it done. While you have someone that disagree with whatever you want to do with the law dealing with guns, we will never be able to come together, because it's not affecting them. When it affects them, then changes will come. Other than that, it's going to keep on happening. That's why they can't vote on it. That's why they can't come to an agreement, because people disagree, because it doesn't affect them.
Hmm. Interesting point. Lavelle, thank you so much. Your thoughts about that, Leslie?
I think Lavelle is right, and when he says it doesn't impact them, he's talking about white people, right? If it doesn't impact white people, then we don't see action happen. In addition to that, what I want the listeners to remember is that the people still hold the power, right? And so we believe that the people who are currently in power do not value all lives, do not value Black lives, then we need to vote them out and vote people in that actually do mirror those values that we hold true.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Shaka, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. Fisher.
Hi, go right ahead.
I just want to agree with my other brother just called. They don't care. Since President Biden took office, what has he done for us? What did the Congress have done for us? They had the racist filibuster in the Senate that block Black people not to progress in this country. So it's a shame. If it doesn't happen to them, they don't care. It only happened to us. So therefore, these white folks, they don't care about Black people. Top, Boston, 10 Black people died. If it's just one of them stole, white stole, a Black man go in there and shoot them, trust me, they will kill that Black man, just like Mr. Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
This country have done us wrong. They have done us wrong. And it's time for Black people to educate themselves. What we have, we need to vote. We need to put people in office that look like us, that feel like us, that sounds like us.
Mm.
But until then, we keep putting these white folks in office. They don't care. You heard what Ted Cruz said today. You heard what Mitch McConnell said. They say they want to save baby, but they're blocking baby formula. They don't want to vote for the $1 million to help mothers. Guess who's suffering? Black mothers are going to suffer the most.
Okay.
So these white folks don't care for us.
Shaka, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about what has happened in America since the murder of George Floyd. What has happened or not happened to police departments? What has happened to reform, legislative reform, law enforcement reform, attitudes about policing in this country. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You mentioned, go right ahead.
I just wanted to say that I heard the hopelessness.
Yes.
And the callers, and I want us to remember that we cannot depend on our oppressors to see our humanity and to do right, right? We have to unify. We have to come together. And when I say that, I'm not even just talking about Black people. I'm talking about all humanity that believe in human rights, that believe in civil rights, and that believe Black lives matter, because I don't think this burden is just on Black people. But I do believe that we primarily have to come together and unify and to recognize that this is a battle that our ancestors have fought a good fight, and that we must continue and hold that baton. And so I don't want you all to be hopeless, because there is still much hope in the midst of adversity.
You mentioned earlier about the retirement of Chief Madari Arredondo from the Minneapolis Police Department. He left quietly, from all accounts. He did not say much about his leaving when he retired. But when you mentioned it earlier, I could tell there was disappointment that he left, because he was formed by the crucible of the murder of George Floyd. What do you believe that Minneapolis has lost by his retirement?
I think we lost a lot. And you did hear disappointment, but not disappointment in Chief Arredondo, but disappointment in the system.
Right.
We know that these systems have built in immune systems that literally push anything out that threatens, right, is structured and the status quo. And so it's very unfortunate. It's not just about having good people, but it's about a real culture change and supporting these people when they are in the positions, because we can only do but so much. And so for me, you know, Minnesota, Minneapolis does feel a little less safe. It does feel like we have less of a voice and less people that actually want to do right, specifically from the police side, specifically from the inside out. And so it makes activists and people who care about liberation and justice hard job a little bit harder.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Milton, calling from Baltimore. Quickly, what's on your mind? Milton, are you there? Milton, give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Willie, calling from D.C. Willie,
yes.
Thanks for calling.
How you doing today? I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead real quick.
What the young lady just said was everything that I wanted to say, but a little bit more. It's what we going to do as a people. We can't depend on nobody to do for us what we can do for ourselves better. And it all goes back to a religious standpoint. We have to come together, all the people that's righteous, regardless what color it is. But we have to be under that one religion. God gave us a religion. We have to be the religion that the prophets was. Why they don't tell us what religion is that? Christianity is for them. It's not for us.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you, because every time I hear this, you know, I get a little frustrated, and I'm a Christian too, because I, you know, so let's not get that twisted. But you know, in this nation, there are so many religions that people practice, and there are people who are non-Christians who believe that this world needs to change as a result of the murder of George Floyd, and there are people who are Christians who do not. So I'm going to have to you know, give you a side eye on that, Willie, because to be quite honest, I don't believe it. But thank you for calling. A final word from you, Leslie.
Well, shout out to Washington, D.C. I'm from D.C., born and raised. So thank you, Willie, for calling in. And I just want to say that we are all one people, and I would echo your sentiments that we should not be divided by religion. We should not be divided by skin tone. We should not be divided by sexual orientation. We should not be divided by anything, right? At the end of the day, we are all human beings, and we were put here to live out our purpose, and white supremacy is killing that, and that is what we should be outraged about. And so I just encourage you all to keep fighting. As I would like to say, don't complain, activate. And I just thank you all for giving me this opportunity, and I look forward to tapping in with you all in the future.
Leslie, thank you for lending your voice to this conversation. It's always a positive when you were on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. We have more of this discussion coming up. Renee calling from Waldorf. We're going to talk to you next. And just remember, the Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. Stretches in for John Mons. And he's next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Where are we now? That is the question of the day. What has and has not changed since the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis? We continue this conversation today with PJ Hill, Vice President of the Minneapolis NAACP. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Also joining us shortly, Misha Green. Of course, Misha Green, content editor for Features and Opinion with the Baltimore Sun. PJ, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And Misha, thank you so much for joining the conversation as well. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Harold.
So let me first start with you, PJ, before I go to Renee calling from Waldorf. She's been patient, and I want to hear what she has to say. But, you know, PJ, I'll ask you the same question that I asked earlier in the program. What is your opinion about the executive order that President Biden signed yesterday? It created a database, but only for federal policing agencies. It does not affect local police, small departments, large departments, departments in between.
My opinion is it's not really impacting the law enforcement that deals daily with the community. So we need our local police forces to be a part of that act. When I seen them sign it and they talked about it, I said, oh, this is just another check the box, because it's not going to impact anything that impacts the community day to day.
Well, you know, as you know, we have separation of powers, legislative, executive, judicial. Some would argue that the Biden administration is doing what it can, but as you know, a lot of the real action rests at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill, and there isn't any movement. There hasn't been any movement since the murder of George Floyd.
You're exactly right. You know, we appreciate all the efforts, but, you know, what things are measured by is results. And what we, like you said, it hasn't been no movement. People from the community, they don't feel a change, and that's what matters. People's perception is their reality. And right now, our reality is looking stark. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, nothing has changed.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Renee, calling from Waldorf. Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Loud and clear. Go right ahead.
Okay, because I'm in the car. So your previous guest, Leslie, I couldn't have agreed with her more, keeping the faith, but keeping moving forward. And I know that there was maybe three callers before the man was really discouraged and talking about, you know, once it affects a senator or something. But remember Sandy Hook, and if you will, those were majority white kids. And we all felt like, man, if nothing's done, But there has been some changes, and I believe, and it's unfortunate. I think people need to read their history to see all that our ancestors have gone through and just have to realize you've got to keep moving forward. Get out there, protest, be really informed who your lawmakers are, and select good people.
So that's an interesting point. I want to stay within the context of the past 2 years and the murder of George Floyd. Because it, as I said 2 years ago, and this was a Rodney King moment, but with worse circumstances, obviously, because George Floyd was murdered. What we saw with George Floyd was a thing that a lot of Black people have been saying for decades, for more than 100 years when they had a voice. I told you so. That this is what they're doing, but a lot of these things were falling on deaf ears. The Rodney King moment back in, 1991?
Right.
Where we didn't, I told you so, and everybody was so shocked that he was being beaten by police officers with batons. I told you so, but nothing had really changed. George Floyd 2 years ago, I told you so. But nothing had really changed. And yesterday, President Biden signed an executive order, and you've seen members of the House controlled by Democrats saying, I told you so. Can we make a change? The Senate says no. So I would challenge you on the change, Renee, maybe more broadly. Yeah, we can talk about the broader change as it relates to civil rights. But as it relates to the past 2 years and what we've tried to accomplish in this country after the murder of George Floyd, depending on who we are, nothing has happened.
Well, I mean, with the president signing, I know the executive order, that's on a federal level, and I get it as far as, like, local. But can you at least, to me, maybe what I'm hoping is opening up people's eyes about the importance of voting locally. I mean, in my community, I'll put Charles County on notice in terms of the number of eligible voters and the people who actually vote. So you vote, you get good sheriffs. You demand changes. It's on the local level, but it does take everybody. When you talk about the NAACP, it shouldn't always fall on the NAACP. I mean, it should, but you understand what I'm saying? It's like people, just like Leslie was saying, we've got to band together. We've got to get good people in office, and we have to keep, that's what people don't want to acknowledge. You have to continue to fight.
Yeah. Misha, I smell the smoke on the other end of the phone. go ahead, because I know you've Renee makes some wonderful, passionate points and goes back to the heart of who we are, because not all of the we's agree that there should be police reform depending on what part of the country you live in, who your representatives are, and the like. But go ahead, Misha. I'm not going to speak for you. Go right ahead.
Well, no, I have just been appreciating all of these passionate opinions. And Renee, thank you for calling in and sharing that. You know, I just want to go back to the president's orders first yesterday, and then we can get a little bit more into a local conversation. But the reality is, like you said, Harold, is that we have been saying the universal we of African Americans saying that we've told you so for years has been falling on deaf ears. Mm-hmm. And so I think the president's action, which was solely sort of presidential in nature, making this executive order, which, as was said previously, doesn't necessarily trickle down to these local districts and police departments. But what was say, hey, since the Senate blocked the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, since the Senate wouldn't let that pass, and yet it passed in Congress, I'm going to make an executive order to say that these I told you so's to see that, to show that these protests have not been falling on deaf ears, at least from a federal, from a presidential, from an executive point of view. And I think that's really important where we are politically when you consider a Buffalo, when you consider a Uvalde, because right now it's in the Senate's hands to make some really important decisions on gun control. And so the president is saying, hey, while I'm listening to the American people who really want this change, and while these lawmakers in certain parts of the world don't, or the United States don't necessarily agree, I'm at least taking note. And so that is, from an optics point of view, a step in the right direction. But come on, it's been 2 years, and there still really has not been much changing. And we do know that it's these local districts that have the Derek Chauvins of the world, that have Breonna Taylor's murderers who are still walking around free, not working, but still living their best lives. And so, you know, I really think that while this grand gesture was what it was, grand, an acknowledgement of George Floyd's legacy, and that we must address policing in this country, there is still so much to do. And while we're at it, I must say that I am so sick of Breonna Taylor just being worked into the George Floyd justice conversation. I would love to see some federal things happening on in terms of that conversation as well.
But PJ, we've been talking about, 2 years after the murder of George Floyd. It hasn't been 2 weeks since the murder of 10 black people in Buffalo. And yesterday, Senate Republicans blocked a domestic terrorism bill that was put forth by the House just days after that massacre in Buffalo. And so, as one of the callers said earlier, as Renee said earlier, if you can't get movement on gun control when they killed, 26 white people at Sandy Hook, then why should we expect to get domestic terrorism and white supremacy laws passed on Capitol Hill when 10 black people are murdered in Buffalo? And why should we expect gun control laws or even a reduction in the rhetoric when 21 people of Hispanic descent, 20 people of Hispanic descent, because there was one white girl who was killed on Tuesday in Texas. So PJ, I say this half in jest, do we just need, a whole bunch of black folks to move to Kentucky so they can vote against a Mitch McConnell, or a whole bunch of black folks to move to Montana, or a whole bunch of black folks who are like-minded in voting and move to Texas? What's the solution?
Harold, that's a great question. And, I don't know if I have just one definitive solution. Like the caller said, we got to continue to press and to continue to fight. I think, majority of our nation is not really tapped in politically when we talk about on the federal level. So it really starts with people activating on the ground in their local communities and bringing awareness and really just doing the activism on a more local level to bring the awareness and to really change the narrative in each of these communities to press these our elected officials on a local level. And then, hopefully that can move to a more national level. But like I said, it's our stark reality. Things keep happening over and over again. And America just shows that we don't value the life of our people like we say we do, because we don't act when things happen.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines. Rosalind calling from Maryland. Thanks for being patient. What's on your mind?
I just want to say a lot of it, white people's perceptions have been based on things that they've been taught generationally. So much has been passed down. I know I can't take up a lot of time with this, but just if we could somehow reach young people and get to have open discussions about race and the feelings and whatnot. Because when I was in college, I learned that a lot of white people fear black people. And if we can just get to these things, that would be a great start. Somehow the educational system really needs to have workshops for young people to just to get to know one another. That would be a start.
You mean white people like perhaps Peyton Gendron, the suspect in the Buffalo shooting, who was only 18 and suspected that white supremacy was behind the shootings? Do you mean getting to people like that? I think you make an excellent point. I mean, I think that is the case in point. And I think in one sense or another, empathy and understanding and having those mature conversations to educate and to inform may make a difference, Roslyn. What do you think, Misha?
Okay. It's going to take time.
How much time? There's the question.
How much time?
Misha, how much time?
I'll let go of that.
My goodness. I think we've been asking that question for decades, if not centuries, right? You know, I think at this juncture, we have to realize that these conversations have been happening. I think that we can't give these 18-year-olds a pass for thinking that white supremacy is part of the general conversation and construction of how we should continue to run this country. By no means can I just give that a pass, because we saw 18-year-olds and younger in the streets and fighting over the past 2 years after George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery. Those were the leaders. Generation Z was out there leading the fight. And with social media and the things of the like, those same people who are going deep and deep into these chat rooms and threads of white supremacy have the other, and even TikTok and Instagram and those kinds of social media platforms that can give you sort of a world and platform to express those ideals. They have access to other opinions and sort of more, if at this point for their generation, more popular opinions of talking critical race theory, of talking equality, of discussing anti-racism in conversations with their families and friends. And so I can't say that these conversations aren't happening. Not everywhere, for sure. I mean, that is why the critical race theory is something that we're talking legislatively, but I think at the end of the day, what it boils down to is that the time is now to be the Betos of the world, to be all up in folks' faces and saying, you don't have an excuse not to talk about equality. You don't have an excuse to be angry when 21 people died 2 days ago and 10 people died last week. You don't have an excuse when these kinds of things happen. You know, I think that it's time to stop saying we need to have the conversation. The conversations are happening. It's time to be in folks' faces and saying we won't take it anymore.
Roslyn, thank you so much for your thoughtful phone call and input. I appreciate your time. Let me go to Morgan. Morgan calling from Maryland. Morgan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that it's like I agree with Roslyn, I agree with Misha, I agree with all of you all, right? I think as far as the gun violence and the gun control issue that's really troubling America and has been for a very long time, I think what it boils down to, in my opinion, is just the laws being changed. I saw a post on Instagram earlier today, and it was a guy who's from Europe. He said he is from Scotland. He remembers like a school shooting when he was like 5 years old back in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
He said they had passed. He said after that, you know, it shocked their country. and it moved them, all of their political people in office, it moved them to make more strict gun laws be put in place. So they passed all these laws to make gun laws more strict. And he said, how many gun school shootings or, you know, school shootings do you think we've had since that happened? Mm-mm. And he said, I was like, maybe one, maybe two. He said, zero.
None.
So that speaks volumes. And I think if we can, you know, and that's in a country that doesn't have as much of the racial divide that we do there, you know, or the cultural issues, you know. So I think that's where it begins.
And yeah, but Morgan, if I may interrupt you, that and PJ, I'm not going to hang up on you. I want you to think about it because I think you touched on a point. Mm-hmm. Because America, because of the way it was founded, mm-hmm. and because there are so many different kinds of people here.
Right.
That may be the reason why we can't get anything done. That, you know, that shooting that happened in New Zealand a couple of years ago, the prime minister, 2 days, 2 days after the shooting, stood up and just banned guns. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I am not here for that. And there were some dissenters, but it happened. What Morgan was just talking about in Scotland, I'm sure there were some dissenters, but it happened. Just on this gun control piece, the things that the president was talking about when he was, you know, overseas is that, these things are not happening, and you know, you don't have mass shootings in these Asian countries. But America is so different, right or wrong, good or bad, Second Amendment, like it or hate it, is the thing that is getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just on the gun piece. But then when we talk about the racial piece and how people who are not black will often, they'll say, but can we get over it? Or, I understand it, but then I can go home and not worry about it because I'm not black. That doesn't make them bad, but it just makes them not black and not have to worry about black problems.
Right. Yes, I agree. And for the race issue as well, in my opinion, it also is, it's like they want to belittle this situation and say, get over it, you know, but there's never been a real resolution. How can we get over something that has never been resolved? It's an ongoing thing. You know, we need a resolution. We need, you know, we need things passed, bills passed and laws passed more so in our favor to protect us. We've had some things, but nothing has really been resolved, and it's just constant. We're continually having to deal with this as black people, as a community. We also need to care more. I heard, you know, a lot of callers say that as well, and I agree with that too. We need to be more involved with the things that are happening in the rooms where laws are being made and start, you know, canvassing for ourselves in that way as well. So I mean, like the other caller said, it's going to take time, but I think we really need to just like start putting our foot down and be more serious and take, you know, more a proactive stance versus like, oh, now when something happens, we need to do something about it.
PJ, Morgan just said we need a resolution to the problem. In my head, I heard revolution for the problem. Mm-hmm. What might that revolution look like? Is this an intellectual revolution? What to fix this? Because heretofore, nothing else has happened.
No, I think she's spot on. I played professional basketball for almost a decade. I've been to 51 countries, and I've been all over the world and lived in a lot of these countries. The issues that we deal with in America just because are really because of the race divide and the laws. Because I've lived in Asian countries where they don't have no guns in the country. And so I think really changing the laws. But then, you know, the race part just goes past the gun. It's even in policing. When you go to the suburbs, the white folks feel protected and served. That's what the police do in the suburbs. In the community, in black communities, the police, they police the people. Law enforcement police. There's a big difference between being protected and served and being police. And so that's why, I mean, here in Minneapolis, when you think about like ownership, that's why people take to the streets and then go tear the whole city up, because we don't own nothing here. And the laws were built in a way that has oppressed us for so long. And that's why we don't own nothing. So, and then for white folks, I really feel this, that they feel like they have to give up something for other races to be able to come up, when that's not the case. I truly believe that all boats rise in high tide. How do we focus on raising the tide? But for them, it's a different mindset. They feel if they, you know, make these laws, they do things, then they have to give up some of their power.
Yeah. Morgan, thank you so much for contributing to the conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Misha, we can go back to the education piece, because on one hand, as we look at the future of making a difference, and you want people who are empathetic, but it starts when they're young. But the young people now are seeing, in some communities, seeing their parents vote against, speak against, march against empathy for issues of that black people have been concerned about, the policing issue that PJ just met, the reason that we're having this conversation, the George Floyd conversation, the Ahmaud Arbery conversation, and so forth and on. And so how do you get an educational system, for example, to just tell the painful truth?
You know, I think that it is one of those things where you have to hope that the educational system and that the teachers in every sort of way are giving students an opportunity to trust the information and the facts while also healthfully interrogating and questioning it. And so if they're sharing this painful truth, which is absolutely factual and absolutely as painful as many of the other things that we as Americans have had to learn historically, or as people of the world have had to learn historically, that have had nothing to do or not directly with American history. You know, there was no holding back when I learned about the horrors of the Holocaust. And yet, there are still people questioning its existence, right? But for the majority of those folks who are in a classroom who know that those questions may exist, they at least are able to ask their teachers and interrogate it in a healthy and safe environment. And mm-hmm. So my hope is that we can sort of get to a point in where we're having these honest conversations about race, honest conversations about policing and systemic oppression, and how, as PJ so beautifully said, that in black communities there's policing, and in white and suburban communities the police are truly protecting and serve and doing what they have meant to do or taken vows and oaths to do versus harassing and policing and looking for African Americans to mess up. And so if we have these conversations that this happens, and it is a fact that it happens, and there's history and so many incidents to back it up, that we are creating a safe environment for it. Because, again, I think we've been having these conversations for a while in certain districts, in many districts, in fact. And yet, I'm not sure if students have been really given the opportunity to interrogate it the way that creates a valuable conversation, so that those students who may have parents who say that there should absolutely be racism and white supremacy in this country, that they can at least counter to their parents in a way that is productive. And even if it doesn't work in their household, they hopefully can be the change that's necessary.
I think that example that you used about the Holocaust is spot on. You know, after World War II, yes, there was a movement that has spanned decades. We don't want to see this happen again. And the idea that what we saw happen to George Floyd 2 years ago, those protests weren't just in this country. They were all over the world. We don't want to see this happen again. But here we are 2 years later, and there are no laws on the books that represent the kind of protection that that we needed, since before George Floyd and since after. I want to thank both of you, Misha Green, PJ Hill, for sharing in this great conversation. I appreciate it. Also, Leslie Redman, we appreciate her input as well. Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, May 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. I'm going to take a vacation. I'll be back in about 10 days, but we'll still be here. Good night.